Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Kozora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 96. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Kozora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation. And Dave, if this show was a 40-yard dash, I'd put the over-under time on it of about 2 hours. We have a ton of stuff to talk about, even more than just the combine itself. So buckle up. It's going to be a heck of a ride here.
I would like to announce that I will not be running today, or I'm not going to do anything. I'm not even
going. Pro day. You're waiting for your pro day.
Yeah, I'm waiting for my pro day. I'm not even going to measure in for this show. But yeah, I mean, let's get right to it. I mean, no sense to jibber jabber here at the top of the show. What we got today?
Yeah, we'll try to go through things as quickly as possible. But there is so much here to talk about, and so much, I think, you know, newsworthy news, of course, that we'll try to cover it all as completely as possible. But I do want to start here. I know there's a ton of stuff going on about the combine, Justin Fields, Deontay Johnson. On a more somber note, though, lost some important people over the weekend. Initially, Andy Russell, Steelers Super Bowl winning linebacker, a legend, one of the pillars of the Steel Curtain. He died this weekend at the age of 82. And so that's obviously some very sad news there as Pittsburgh unfortunately continues to lose key members of that 70s dynasty squad. Russell, one of the few holdovers from the Chuck Knoll era, and somebody that proved he could be part of that new look team and rebuilt group, and was a guy of the titan of durability. I think the blurb that I had read, he never missed a game in his entire high school, college, or NFL career. Two-time Super Bowl champion, winning the first two with Pittsburgh. So that is a huge loss there, Dave, of Andy Russell.
Yeah, absolutely. And man, when you talk about how early, you know, he was one of those early Steelers made his first Pro Bowl, I think, in 1968. I was born in 1968, 1 year before Chuck Knoll's arrival. And as you wrote up here, earned league-wide recognition despite, you know, the Steelers' poor 2-11 and one record under head coach Bill Austin at the time. Went on to make a second Pro Bowl. Obviously, what, a two-time Super Bowl champion, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And a guy that with all of the stars and, you know, great players that the Steelers had on the defensive side of football in especially in the early 70s there, he's a guy that kind of has gotten, I don't want to say swept underneath the rug, but, you know, he got missed, especially when it comes to Hall of Fame possibilities and all like that. He's been like a semifinalist at least, hadn't he?
For the senior committee?
I'm even after his playing days, I forgot to search that before we got on. I mean, it seems like I remember him being, up for, I don't know, either a finalist or semi-finalist. I don't know, over the years, but, we'll have to look that one up. Do you have that in front of you?
I don't. I believe it, though. Maybe at some point, I'm sure he was, you know, strongly considered 7-time Pro Bowler, one of the great linebackers of that era, just unfortunately overshadowed to an extent by Jack Lambert, Jack Ham, and of course, the defensive line that Pittsburgh had. So, yeah, I don't have the particulars on that, but wouldn't surprise me that, you know, he came close and he's been endorsed. And, you know, people like Joe Green and Frank Harris before he passed said that that's a guy, Andy Russell, that should be in the Hall of Fame alongside them and so many others of that Steelers team. So maybe that Steelers fatigue that, you know, unfortunately kept Russell out. But I think Steeler fans and certainly his teammates knew the important role that he played.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, LC Greenwood, obviously another one there. So anyway, we'll sad day. Obviously, you know, you can't talk about, I don't think, the early 70s Steelers without, you know, at least mentioning Andy Russell's name. So, so, you know, definitely a sad day of his passing.
Then some other sad news came in on Sunday. Apparently, this happened Sunday morning, according to a press release issued by ESPN, that Chris Mortensen, longtime ESPN journalist and reporter, has died at the age of 72. We don't know the exact reason why. We know he was battling throat cancer, diagnosed back in 2016. He officially retired from ESPN this past September, citing health and family and faith. And so that's news on Chris Mortensen. And for somebody like me, I mean, that's the guy I grew up watching, essentially, as a kid, watching ESPN and the NFL draft coverage. Mortensen, for a long stretch, was, you know, on that main stage there with Mel Kiper and the host and Chris Berman covering the draft. I put the clip in of the 2004 NFL draft of Ben getting, you know, drafted by Pittsburgh, and Mortensen reacting to that and citing a coach that said this guy is as talented as anybody's come out of the draft since John Elway, and became true in some sense. So, that's a guy that was literally part of my childhood. So it's another massive loss.
Yeah, and you want to talk about ESPN and kind of that their heyday, which is more in my wheelhouse there, when you had Dan Patrick, Kenny Mayne, and Keith Olbermann, and Rich Eisen, Rich Eisen, all like that, you know, and obviously the football coverage with Chris Berman and Tom Jackson and Mort, and boy, the Mort Report, you know, how iconic was that? Look, he's obviously battled cancer here for a while, and I think at the end, after the 2023 draft last year, he had tweeted out, I think, that he was stepping away, and hopefully that was going to be temporary. But unfortunately, he passed, I think, earlier this morning here. Real quick note about Andy Russell. I just researched this real quick from the Great Talk of Fame website. They do a great job covering, especially Steelers stuff there when it comes to Hall of Fame, you know, talk and all like that. Yet the former defensive team captain, and this is from a September 11th, 2017 article here on their website. Yet the former defensive team captain isn't in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Worse, he's never been discussed as a finalist and hasn't been a semi-finalist, but he's one of 27 former Steelers chosen to the franchise's inaugural Hall of Honor, with the group celebrated at the team's November 26th game, I guess, that year at Heinz Field there. So I guess I misremembered. Seemed like, you know, over the years I remembered him. Maybe he made that first initial long list and then didn't make the cut down or something along those lines there. So unfortunate that, you know, his name has never even been brought up or hasn't even been discussed, not only as a finalist, but as a semi-finalist as well. So, Chris Mortensen, definitely a big loss, especially when you talk about historically and media covering the NFL.
Two men that will certainly be missed. There's no question about that. And as difficult as it is to segue and transition from that somber news to the here and now for the Pittsburgh Steelers and the NFL, we will attempt to do so. Do need to mention, by the way, as I usually do, Dave and I are recording this here Sunday night around 8 p.m. Eastern time. And I say that especially because with the way the news cycle's going, by Monday morning, to take your joke, Dave, Pittsburgh may be moving to Albuquerque. I mean, just one story after another here. So let's dive right on in. We'll kind of get to the combine stuff here momentarily, but let's start kind of the biggest story that dropped here Sunday. Tony Pauline from Sportskeeda reporting that the Pittsburgh Steelers would be open to trading Deontay Johnson. Now, to be clear, this is not Johnson on the trade block. Pauline makes that clear. He's not saying a trade is imminent or that Pittsburgh is really actively exploring or seeking out a trade, but they will be open to dealing Deontay Johnson for the right price if they receive the right offer. So, Dave, what's your reaction to this report?
Yeah, read verbatim what he wrote, Alex, the first part. And there's like two parts. There's the first part, and then there's the second part later on in the paragraph. Read all that verbatim.
Well, I think I primarily in the article have just the second part, which is to me is the
all right, most. I've got it here. I'll read it up real quick here. He says, is Pittsburgh Steelers receiver Deontay Johnson on the trading block? The short answer is possibly, if the price is right. And then later on in that article, he goes on to write, while it's not fair to say Johnson is on the trading block, several people tell me the Steelers are open to moving the receiver if they receive fair compensation. So that's kind of loose, right? He says it's not fair to say Johnson is on the trading block, but several people tell me the Steelers are open to moving the receiver if they get fair compensation. Well, how many people around the NFL probably could you say that about? A, what is fair compensation? B, who, you know, did this leak to Pauline? But I mean, he says several people. He does not say members of the Steelers organization. All right, let's now that we at least have the context, people out there, people can start, you know, making their own decisions on the validity of the report. I will say this first and foremost: I like a lot of the stuff that Tony Pauline does, especially when it comes to draft stuff. Really has kind of made his mark over the years in kind of rumblings that he's hearing around the NFL. I think he attends a lot of pro days and stuff like that. So draft stuff is more of his line. I think it gets a little bit more gray area with Tony when it becomes regular NFL news. So I'll just leave it at that when it comes to his credibility and all. Second, we talked about this the other day, right? About the potential probability or whether or not people think Deontay Johnson should be traded. And I think this was on the heels of Omar Khan kind of, you know, saying, having, you know, kind of catching himself about contract negotiations or and however we framed that I think in that last podcast there. If this team, and that's a big if this team were to trade Deontay Johnson, such a trade, you would think, as I pointed out the other day, would more than likely happen before March 16th. Because that is the day that, unless his contracts change, which I'll have to reach out to, a couple of my contract buddies, Joel Corey and others. I don't, you know, I'm sure I would have heard by now if something in details in his contract would have changed. But as far as I know, Deontay Johnson's scheduled to earn a $3 million roster bonus on March the 16th. And if he's still on your roster come time, you pay that, then you are on the hook for that. So it's not like you pay that roster bonus and then you ship it off to the other team. Now, I imagine I don't think there's a way around. I don't even know if you can negotiate such a thing after the fact. I've never heard of such, you know, paying a roster bonus and then getting it back from another team after it's become due. So let's just put that out there first and foremost. If indeed this team were to trade Deontay Johnson, it would make sense for that to happen before they pay that roster bonus. Agreed on that?
Agreed.
All right. The second part of this would be, what is fair compensation, I guess. To me, at least from where I sit right now, I mean, I'm not taking no third round pick, I don't think, for Deontay Johnson. You know, but if gun to my head, and that's, you know, if he was disgruntled and saying, I got to get out of here, trade me, this, that, and the other, I suppose my arm could be twisted into a third round pick. But ideally, I don't think personally I would want just a third round pick. On top of everything else, if you do trade him and you do trade him by March 16th, that's a long time to go until the draft happens. A lot can obviously happen. Now, this is, you know, coming out of the combine and all, I think most people would agree this is a very, very deep, exciting wide receiver class where, man, you can even probably get into the fourth round. You're going to have some nice potential finds there when it comes to this wide receiver class. However, the Steelers usually have, you know, a small list of the guys that they want, right? When it comes to players, how guaranteed are you to get the players specifically at one position like that you want, that have the hearts and smarts and all like that? And make no bones about it, if you traded Deontay Johnson by March 16th, look, this team already, at least I feel, probably needs to address the wide receiver position, even if they don't trade Deontay Johnson. If they do trade Deontay Johnson, this team better think about double dipping if they don't go free agency and try to fill those shoes. And also, there's no guarantee that you, the guy that you get or guys that you get in the draft are going to be those first year, you know, superstars that, that are replacing what goes out the door as well. And look, I understand Deontay Johnson's not perfect. People are probably, as is always the case when it comes to this show and topics like this, probably half the people say, yeah, go ahead and trade him. Get him out of town. Get what you can get for him. And then another probably half of them are probably like, no, heck no, you can't trade him. Or you know, tell me for sure what's going to happen after you trade him. That kind of thing there. I think when you look at this at every angle, look, I understand that if you don't get anything done, this is potentially the final year of his contract. Well, if that's the case, to me, this team, even addressing the position in the draft, I feel like this team is better with Deontay Johnson on the roster than they are without him, personally. And then obviously, you know, you'd see what happens after next year. If he doesn't have the kind of season that warrants a franchise tag and you don't have him signed to an extension, you obviously stand to lose him in free agency. However, you know, whatever compensatory value comes out of that at that point. Is it plausible between now and March 16th that the Steelers trade Deontay Johnson? I don't think that you can come right out and say it's not plausible. That's the way that I would answer that question. Do I think that it's likely to happen? No, and mainly for all the reasons kind of that I've run down there. But if they were to trade him, I would think that it would happen by March 16th. And here we are. Today is March the 3rd. So something like that would have to come together really, really quick. I would view a trade happening to, if it did happen, as maybe a partial result of maybe Deontay saying, I want out of here. Now, Deontay Johnson did take to Twitter for whatever it's worth after that report surfaced on Sunday night, with kind of at least where we left off at here. I think three tweets he had. I think the first one was people just talking. The second was second one I think he wrote was let that old pile of poo emoji stay in the past. And the third one is, it is what it is, with the shoulder shrug emoji. I don't know what to, I'm not versed like the kids in kind of reading into some of these things, but for the most part, it feels like he's kind of downplaying the news overall. Boy, I said a lot there. I guess I should come up for air and let you speak.
No, I think you said it well, Dave, and I largely agree. My expectation is that Deontay Johnson will be a Steeler in 2024 for the reasons you mentioned. And what this really report centers around is fair compensation. The right price is what Pauline is getting at. And I think that's going to be tough to do if we assume that's going to be, you know, involving at least one day two pick, a second pick, or you get a third and a fifth and a pick swap, something like that. For the reasons you mentioned, you know, the fact that he's going into the last year of his contract, and if you trade for him and you send a day two pick, you're extending that guy, right? You saw Chicago screw up the whole Claypool thing, and you know they lose him after a season and a half, and it was a terrible trade all around. So if you're trading for Deontay, it has to be with the intent of extending him, correct?
I would think so, unless you're talking about this another aspect that I tried to talk myself through after you know that report came out earlier on Sunday there. You know, I suppose you could have a team that feels like they're, you know, one receiver away from making a good Super Bowl run. It's also going to, maybe they've got some extra picks and they're also going to draft a wide receiver, and they got plenty of cap space on top of it all, and they're saying to themselves, all right, we'll rent Deontay Johnson for a third round draft pick. If we can extend him, fine. If we can't, fine, but maybe he'll be enough to push us to competing for a Super Bowl. And then if he, you know, we'll see how his season goes. Maybe we franchise tag him after the season, or if he walks in free agency, well, then we get compensatory value for, you know, You know, obviously the future, the draft after the, you know, after the free agency period, the year after the free agency period that happens, which I guess in that case would probably be what, 2026, is what you're looking at compensatory value for a team if they traded for them, didn't extend them and let them walk off in free agency. Are you really going to spend any considerable draft capital on a guy as a 1 year rental, unless you, it was for all the reasons I just stated. You think you're one player away. You're not so concerned whether or not you sign him long term. You just know you need that missing piece in your offense for the 2024 season. But at its core, I believe you're right. If you do trade for him, especially if you give up any sizable draft capital, you're probably going to want to extend him. And even before then, wouldn't you kind of want to talk to him or get permission to talk to him and his agent to see if you work something out? Because if you traded for him and you were kind of in a cap situation there, he kind of has the leverage there because he's already on the books for what he's on the books for this year, which, you know, isn't probably going to break the back of teams, but you would probably like to know at least ahead of time, is this guy extendable? And as we talked on the other day anyway, I mean, for whatever new contract Deontay, if he were to get, is he actually going to take a less average yearly value, or is there a team out there going to be willing to pay him $19, $20 million per year, especially coming out of the season that he had? That's hard to imagine in and of itself.
Sure. I agree. He won't be cheap to resign, and determining market value is going to be tricky just based on where he's at and the, you know, kind of injury marred season he came off of. And yeah, with the all in move, I know it's, you're just kind of talking out loud and entertaining the idea, but typically if teams do that, that's like a mid season thing, which is rare to begin with. But typically if they're going to make that all in push, that's mid season, it's cheaper, you know, what kind of team you have, you're having success, you're healthy, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that seems more plausible, where just hypothetically, let's say the Pittsburgh are struggling by the midseason point and they want to unload Deontay for, you know, less compensation, obviously. But then I think that door opens up. I think currently where this team sits, where other teams sit, it wouldn't make sense. And then on top of that is, as you mentioned, it is a historically good looking receiver draft class. And so why would you go trade for Deontay, go spend a second round pick, probably have to extend him for some pretty good money, as opposed to just drafting a rookie on a rookie contract and let that guy, you know, be part of your offense and have him under team control for the next, you know, 4 years, 5 years, if you have him in the first round with a fifth round option. So with that, with the other receivers available, Mike Evans about to be a free agent, T. Higgins, a potential tag and trade candidate, I think those guys are going to be more attractive. I don't see how Pittsburgh will get the value they think they should, if this report is accurate, to be willing to part with Deontay Johnson.
I agree. I think when you add everything together, and that's what we do, we try to look at it at all different angles there and leave emotion out of it. And that, you know, I think if you look at everything that we just discussed here, it really doesn't add up overall. Now, have trades happened before that haven't added up? I mean, just look at the Claypool trade, especially from the Bears side of things last year. But once again, that was a trade deadline type situation as well, too. And as you appropriately stated, it's almost like, you know, why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free here? When you know, when you kind of look at, you know, what's happening with this, with this draft class this year. And, you know, one last thing, when you look at the Steelers, you know, current roster, I mean, we've already talked several times this offseason about, is Allen Robinson going to stay? Is he going to go? If he stays, he's definitely probably not going to stay at that 10 million number. Even if he stays at $2.5-3 million. What do you really have there? And then who else do you have behind him? At least two, while you break in another young wide receiver or two. You got George Pickens and Calvin Austin III. Calvin Austin III isn't the most established wide receiver at this point. So you really would be trimming your room down pre-draft to essentially George Pickens, Calvin Austin III would really be the two names in it. Barring the draft. And then you have painted yourself into the corner. Whereas as I said at the top of this thing, I don't know how you feel at this point, especially coming out of the draft. I mean, coming out of the combine, Alex, it feels like the Steelers damn sure better draft at least one wide receiver this year. And if they did not have Deontay Johnson, they damn sure better draft two.
Let me, though, just play devil's advocate. And I have the article for the morning on the site, kind of exploring all reasons why it would make sense to keep him and why it would make sense to trade him away. And from the other hat, at the combine, as you mentioned, they met with a ton of receivers, not just a ton of receivers, but likely or potential first round picks. I believe 6 formal interviews with receivers that we know, and that's just a list that we know. And they are essentially all among the top names in this class outside of, okay, not Marvin Harrison, not Malik Nabers, but Troy Franklin, A.D. Mitchell, Keon Coleman, Brian Thomas Jr., Rome Odunziehe, Ricky Pearsall, informal, Tez Walker, informal. And so that to me caught my attention for the volume of the position and the, you know, projection of the position, first round guys. Is this team preparing to take a pretty big swing here at wide receiver?
Well, look, I'll say this. I think this team needs to draft a wide receiver. They did not draft one last year. It would be pretty rare for this. When's the last time this team's gone 2 drafts in a row without drafting a wide receiver? It's what
2003, 2004.
I mean, that's a long time since that has happened. And especially when you look at even if they kept Deontay Johnson with the potential that he might walk, and you still don't fully know what you have in Calvin Austin. Anyway, it feels like, you know, once again, it feels like you have to draft at least one. So why wouldn't you, because of the way potential of the way the board might break. And then if you truly believe in that, you know, some players you just can't pass if given the opportunity to draft them, especially at 20th overall. Could there be a receiver at 20th overall that you absolutely have ranked higher on your board than, let's say, a top center, you know, or a top tag? Basically, I'm saying from where I sit right now on March the 3rd, I would be a bit surprised if the team drafted a wide receiver in the first round. I would not bet my house against it.
Did you have that thought going into the combine that there'd be a chance they would take a receiver in the first round? Because I really didn't have that thought in my head.
No, I really didn't. But I have had it in the back of my head, though, that this team does have to find a way to wedge in a wide receiver within the first 4 rounds of the draft. But look, I learned a lot about the wide receiver class these last 4 days, you know,
sure.
And I think it's very strong. And I even if they kept Deontay Johnson, Alex, this is such a deep class. I don't think anybody would be surprised if this team double dipped at the position.
And again, even if you keep Deontay, knowing he's entering the last year of his contract, with I think depth being very thin behind him and Pickens, I think you're right. They're going to take a receiver. The question becomes where, how high will they take a receiver? Not if, but when in the draft. And to me, there's a pretty clear line between the types you're looking at. They want big body guys. I think all these names I mentioned are 6'1" or above, and most of them 200 plus pounds, and most of them are viewed as first round picks. That tells me that there's a lot of smoke going on at receiver. The assumption would be in the scenario of why Deontay could get dealt is, okay, they deal Deontay, they get whatever they get back for him, a day 2 pick, and they use a first or second round pick on a receiver. That's why they're looking so strongly, it appears, at these top names. That's the assumption that I think you can reasonably, understandably make when you hear this report about Deontay Johnson.
That's where I think the part of the plausibility aspect of it at least maybe comes into it here.
Right. So I think that's one reason why you could make that case for, okay, maybe they are entertaining that idea, as the report indicates. Other reasons are, does Deontay fit perfectly into this offense? We know under Arthur Smith, he wants receivers that are physical, that are blocking, that are playing with consistent effort. And those aren't always things that Deontay Johnson shows on tape. Now, I think some people get it twisted where they think Smith requires a bunch of power forward looking wide receivers. That's not necessarily true. I think his offenses always have that type of guy, AJ Brown in Tennessee, Drake London in Atlanta, but he's had small receivers too, but they have to have that tenacious, physical, high effort attitude and tape. And Deontay, I think, is a really hard worker. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he's a really high effort dude in some regards. But obviously, in terms of the blocking and I think just the mental, you know, lapses he'll have and kind of get it in his own head, you're not defining Deontay as a guy that's just kind of just tenacious, down in, down out type of dude.
Look, it wouldn't feel like you're trading away a guy that's going to be around the next 7 years, a potential Hall of Famer, right? You know, but would you know, within that though, you know, are you? I guess you would look at it as, man, there's such a plethora of wide receivers in this class that, all right, even if we got ourselves in a hole where we absolutely, you know, we dealt him and we had to pick, you know, make sure that we got a wide receiver in the first or second round, there's enough guys out there that we like that we feel pretty comfortable that we could fill that hole. And then on top of it, we could get that guy up to speed in contributing how we would like him to contribute in Arthur Smith's offense.
Sure. I think it's a part of it, but I also think when a new OC comes in, you kind of evaluate your whole roster all over and say, okay, this is Smith's system, his ideals, his philosophy, who fits into that and who doesn't. You kind of start there to begin shaping your roster and planning for 2024 and beyond. And, you know, I don't think Johnson is checking all of the things that Smith really values. And, you know, obviously the effort, there were issues last year. When I say high effort earlier, I kind of mentioned the hard worker aspect and improving his hands and trying to correct some of those things. But he's a guy that can be inconsistent and not always, you know, give you that top tier type of effort. He's done it, but not consistently enough. And I can certainly see that as a source of frustration for Smith in this offense.
Okay. Is there a 0% chance that this happens?
No, I would not say 0% chance. No.
No, I would agree with you. Now, once again, I would think that if something like this were to happen, it would happen between, you know, before March 16th. That would seem, unless they got into pushback, you know, that roster bonus, but why in God's green earth would he agree to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. Push back. You know, money going in, you know, guaranteed money going to him. So, I mean, I don't know where else to go on this. I don't think that it's 0% chance, but for all the other stuff, when we tried to look at the other side of why it would happen, right? Do we at least look at that side of enough? And I think most of that's related to the depth of the draft class. And B, how Deontay, what the plans for the offense might be and how Deontay Johnson best fits that or does not fit that.
Agreed. And I think really regardless of whether or not Deontay is a Steeler in 2024, even if he does stay, I cannot get out of my head, and we'll talk about more of this with the combine, but interviewing at least six receivers formally, and we're talking top tier type of dudes. I mean, if that was any other position, you know, that becomes an antenna for me of saying, okay, they're really considering taking this position highly, the way that it looked at a bunch of the top corners and top off-ball linebackers and those kind of, you know, obviously can mesh with team need. And so I sit there and say, I don't know if they're going to exit round two without a receiver in their pocket.
Well, look, it'd be much better if they didn't have this roster bonus to deal with. You could go to the drafts to see what you get. If there's someone that you feel, you know, better fits and someone you can't live without in the first or second round, you take them there. Then you turn around and you deal Deontay during the draft or right after it, you know. But that's where – now, look, is it the end of the world to wait past the roster bonus date and then decide to do something with him? You know, you're talking about $3 million. I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's not economically, it's probably not the best thing to do, but it also would not be the end of the world to throw $3 million out the door like that, especially if you got what you feel would be an upgrade in the draft at the wide receiver position that you could live with that best fits your offense and got something in return, maybe during the draft or after the, you know, during the draft or after the draft for the following year as far as draft compensation.
Sure. And again, you could, you know, hold on to Deontay and then draft a receiver high because you need depth and you need weapons and you want to try to maximize the talent that's around Kenny Pickett, assuming that he's your starter in 2024. There are good reasons to hold on to Deontay and still draft a top receiver. And again, Deontay may not be a Steeler in 2025. Contractually right now, he is not. So we'll see. That's the report. Again, it should be taken in the context that this is, you know, couched around the idea for the right price, that they're open to it, but they're going to have to probably get a really good offer to move him. And I'm skeptical if they actually will get that.
Would you take a third round pick for him?
Would I personally, if I was Omar Khan, is that what you're asking? I would not, no.
I would not either. I'd want at least a second, I think.
Yeah, and again, it's kind of get what you into that. You're
or
subtracting
a third and a,
something else.
Yeah, but even so, I want something in that second round, I think.
It's just the idea of, you know, it's a critical year for an offense that has struggled for many seasons. Let's start subtracting talent from it. Now, obviously, the idea would be you go draft a receiver as well, but, you know, you're not going to get a first round pick back for Deontay. So you have to maybe, you know, put lower other team needs, of which there are many right now. And free agency obviously can shore up some of those things. We'll see how it looks, but it just becomes a little bit more difficult to address your offense in all the ways that it needs to be addressed.
All right. Boiling this all down, you know, my gut tells me nothing's going to happen there. But, you know, if people want to know, is it plausible? Is there 0% chance? I would say, you know, to some minor extent, it's plausible. And is it 0%? I would say, no, it's not 0%, if that makes everybody feel better. My gut tells me nothing's going to happen, but if something does happen, I would think we'd find out by the 16th of March.
All right, Dave, we played the new single. Let's go back to the greatest hits of Justin Fields, which has been just a lot of speculating, as I like to say, for really the entire offseason. It really wasn't until this weekend that there was actually something to me that is more than speculating and gets closer towards actual reporting and from a reputable NFL insider, and that is Adam Schefter, who said on SportsCenter on Saturday, quote, I think, and this is about Justin Fields, of course, I think Atlanta will be something of a surprise right now to trade for Justin Fields. There's been some conversation about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Maybe something can be figured out there, end quote. Now, we can go into all the other talk about Fields that we've discussed before and other comments that Schefter made on the Pardon My Take podcast, and we can debate how do you define what there's been some conversation about the Pittsburgh Steelers means. That's open to interpretation. But what's your take on this from Schefter?
I wish we had two important parts of the equation here. Wish somebody would give us the cheat sheet as far as how many teams are actually really involved in this, and B, what's the compensation looking like at this time. And that's where obviously a lot of speculation comes in. I personally found the interview on the Pardon My Take, I don't want to say enlightening, because there was a lot of more speculation from Schefter in that. But I did kind of, you know, make me rewind, at least force me to kind of go through the exercises as really Schefter was going through the exercise of how many teams are actually interested in trading for Justin Fields right now. And, you know, let's assume that at least Atlanta and Pittsburgh are in there because of kind of what's out there right now. Who else potentially beside him? Adam was asked about Denver. He doesn't think Denver would be in this. He don't think the Seahawks would be in this. He don't think New England would be in this. I think he even is part of trying to work through his own brainstorming or process of talking himself through it throughout the name of the Washington Commanders. But then he even shot his own suggestion down in that. He did kind of leave it as, you know, there is, you know, through these things, there's generally one other team that pops up and, mm-hmm. you know, a surprise. And, you know, you kind of wonder, you know, who would that team be? And when you run down the list of NFL teams in the quarterback situations, and especially at this stage, and you kind of got a good idea maybe about how many, you know, which of these teams are going to maybe take a quarterback in the first round and yada, yada. It does get pretty hard to come up with legitimate potential trade candidates other than Atlanta and Pittsburgh, quite honestly.
And when it comes to Atlanta, you know, I've said I and a lot of the reporting and speculating had been trending this way, that Atlanta has been the favorite to land Justin Fields. In fact, Tony Pauline on Saturday morning reported that the Bears and Falcons were close to finalizing a deal for Justin Fields. That seems to be less likely right now. And a lot of the reporting more recently has been that they're not as in on Justin Fields, the hometown kid, as people think they are. The reporting from ESPN this morning, from, I think, ESPN's Dan Graziano, quote, "I have been told by multiple sources this week that signing Kirk Cousins, not trading for Justin Fields, is the Falcons' top quarterback solution, assuming Cousins makes it to free agency." So I could see Atlanta potentially being in on Fields, but I'm pretty confident based on that report and other reporting as well, including Adam Schefter, who said he would be surprised if Fields went to Atlanta, that at the least the Kirk Cousins domino will have to fall first for Atlanta to potentially get in on Justin Fields.
Okay. My gut feeling on this is Atlanta is still in play in this.
I think they're in play, but it sounds like they're looking at Cousins first and seeing what happens there. And if that's the case, then we're dragging this thing probably into the first week of free agency at the earliest for a potential resolution with Fields.
All right. Let's say it is just two teams though that are in on Fields. So let's say those two teams are hypothetically Atlanta and Pittsburgh. What does that bidding, what does that compensation even look like if you only have those two teams at this point, especially knowing what Chicago has not done themselves a very good job with kind of hiding that, we might get in a situation where we might just hold him. You know, as far as their negotiation and the way they presented this all along, they should have done a better job of, look, we still might get the right package, you know, for that number one pick. We'll listen to offers with Justin Fields. But, you know, we don't, because of his contract, the way it sits right now, we don't have to trade him, you know, especially with what he's supposed to make this coming season here. But they have not handled that well. And that, because of that, it's a foregone conclusion. It feels like at this point they're going to deal them, right? And that's not great from a, we got to get this guy out the door before our number one draft pick gets here, negotiation standpoint. And if you got only two teams negotiating in this, at least in my mind, these two teams might be willing to call each other's bluff as far as putting out good compensation out there. What I'm getting at here is maybe this compensation, what the Bears are ultimately able to get for Justin Fields is going to be now look, Adam Schefter threw out there, well, you know, Ryan Poles was with the Chiefs when they traded Alex Smith. And then what did he say that they got for Alex Smith in that deal, Alex? You remember?
Was it a second round pick? I'm looking it up now.
It's in my article there. I just didn't commit it to memory there. He said, I've got it pulled up right here. He says, I think it's Ryan Poles, the general manager, worked in Kansas City at the time they traded for Alex Smith. They traded two twos to the 49ers for Alex Smith. I'll tell you right now, they ain't going to get no – Ryan Poles needs to automatically be general manager of the year if they get two second-round draft picks for Justin Fields. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. He goes on to say, and this is something that I put on Twitter several weeks ago, and here's what Adam Schefter said. Sam Darnold, to me, when you talk to people, might be the most relevant compensation comparison. The Jets traded him to the Panthers in 2021, and it was for a sixth that year and a four and a two the next year. So three picks, a two, a four, and a six. And Schefter goes on to say, I think that the Justin Fields compensation is somewhere between what Alex Smith got and what Sam Darnold brought. And he paused, you know, and they kind of asked somewhere between, and then he goes, a two and a five, a two and a four, a 2 and a 3, something like that. To me, anything involving a now let's this is so weird to try to how to attack this, especially for a podcast here, and throw my thoughts in here. If we're talking about a second round pick, any second round pick being involved from the Steelers, in my opinion, we're back to the conversation of if you're gonna put that kind of compensation out there, it feels like you got to turn around and pick up his fifth year option.
What's the difference between the cost of the fifth year option and the franchise tag next year? I know we won't have the franchise tag number concretely because it depends on the cap, which is it will probably continue to rise. But what is the franchise tag number for a quarterback this year? 38 million?
Let me see what the tag amount is for quarterbacks this year. 38.301 million. Versus what did we say that the fifth year option is on Justin Fields if you pick it up this offseason?
Yeah, what's the number on that? It's less than 38. I'm pretty sure it's substantially less than 38 million too, because Fields is not.
Well, it's under 30. It is for Fields. It is 25.664. So you're talking 25.664 versus a tag amount next year, which, what's that going to be, over 40 million?
Likely. So I think the idea that some people could argue, say, well, you know, even if you don't pick up his option, you got the tag next year if he has a good season, that is a big difference in money if we're talking fifth year option versus franchise tag.
Sure, but at least you're not tying up. Here's the thing. He's either going to earn that tag or he's not.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. So either he's going to play lights out, he's going to win, you know. Okay. Back up once again here. To me, true or false, if you have a second round pick involved in this, you should probably pick up the fifth year option on Justin Fields.
Sure. That's what I'm getting at, basically. If you're going to spend that kind of capital and knowing the cost, the substantial increase in cost for the franchise tag next year as opposed to the fifth year option, I still have a hard time believing you would trade for the guy and then 6 weeks later decline his fifth year option.
All right. Now let's I'm with you. Okay. And that's been kind of the bulk of the argument since all this stuff kind of started back since December, right? Was, man, if you trade for a guy like that and there's any serious compensation involved, you're probably going to do so with the notion that you're going to turn around and pick up the fifth year option. And then really, do you have a competition? No, because that guy, you got to see that guy on the field because you're already guaranteeing him that money next year. Yada, yada. Now let's say the highest pick is part of compensation of trading for him does not involve a second round pick, but let's say the highest part is a third and a third next year, and I don't know. Let's say it's even a third this year, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But that's the highest round pick that you have involved in there. Theoretically, could you? And yeah, I guess it wouldn't matter what else you're tagging with it, but I'm not giving up like a third and a fourth and a fifth or something for Justin Fields. I think you'd agree on that, right? I mean, you're talking, it would be something like a third and a fifth and a sixth next year or something like that, right?
I think so. I mean, we're getting into some pretty heavy weeds at this point.
All right. Well, let me back it up this way. Let's say whatever the compensation is, the highest pick involved in it is a third round draft pick. Okay.
Okay.
Could you theoretically, in good conscience, not pick up his fifth year option and say, "Look, we'll let these guys battle it out"? Because look, at that point, even if you're not picking up the fifth year option based on the salaries these two have, talking about Justin Fields and Kenny Pickett, you could theoretically form some sort of outline or at least smoke and mirrors where you're making it a competition.
I mean, you could, but who's buying? You can sell it. Who's buying?
Well, I, you know, look, I could, you know, I've sold some coffee in my times to people that didn't need it, you know. But what I'm getting at here is let's go. Let's say you went down to, you know, what kind of investment or gamble is it if we're talking about a third round draft pick with the notion that we'll let this guy boom or bust? And if he plays, if he wins a job, he plays his butt off. You get in the playoffs. It looks like you can make a top 10, 12 quarterback out of him. And then we'll just franchise tag him, you know, the next year. And if he busts, well, you know, it was a gamble for a third round and whatever. I'm not advocating this. It's just so many people say we have not looked at the other side, and all we're doing is just shooting this thing down, which, you know, for lack of a better word, we have, but you know, if indeed it's gotten to the point where there's just two teams, you know, potentially battling for him. And once again, if it's a second round pick, it's a hard sell to say we've got a second round pick invested in him either this year or next year and not turn around and pick up the fifth year option. If you do that and you miss and he bombs out, that's going to cost somebody a job.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get too hung up on the fifth year option discussion because he's not even a Steeler yet. We'll talk about that probably more. If like the main thing is, what are the odds he actually gets dealt to Pittsburgh in the first place? The last thing I'll say is, just again, I have a hard time believing whoever trades for Justin Fields will decline the fifth year option, not only from all the, you know, just the outlook standpoint, but what a mixed message to send your organization. We just traded this guy. We believe he's our starting quarterback. We're going to decline the fifth year option. We don't think you're that good, Justin. Let's play it out and see how you feel. And since Schefter mentioned the Sam Darnold trade, Carolina picked up his fifth year option. And so, you know, and I think Fields is way better now than where Darnold was when he was with the Jets. So if Carolina picked it up, I can't see any team trading for Fields and then turning around and declining his fifth year option.
Look, Justin, say what you will. We've watched his tape. We know a little bit about him to this point. People are going to have their opinions. Well, if he gets an Arthur Smith's offense, you know, better coaching, you know, get the better out of the player, yada, yada. Let's boil it down to my favorite stat, adjusted net yards per passing attempt to this point, Alex. And he has played, he's been in the NFL for three seasons, right? He started 38 games. His adjusted net yards per attempt stat is 4.77 at this point, okay? Kenny Pickett's is 4.97.
there is the run element of Fields, though, to be sure. Clear. Rushing sure. aspect is a big deal.
Sure, but at some point you got to throw the football in the NFL. Sure. All right. Especially on third down, more than likely. You know, so and that's why he's in the position he's in right now, right?
Right. Yeah, that's why it's also because Chicago holds the top pick. If they were picking, if they didn't make that trade with Carolina and they held the ninth pick, the way that they hold it right now, and that was their only pick, they're probably sticking with Fields.
What did I say? I think you kind of agreed with me a couple weeks ago when it feels like we have this conversation every damn podcast now about this kid. And I said, look, if you unequivocally think that you can turn this kid around, then you make the deal. Okay. If you unequivocally, and I can't answer that for the organization. I can't. Sure. But if you think that, if you believe that you're all in on him and think coaching's a problem, the style of offense is the problem and all like that, then and you think you can get him to be a franchise quarterback for the next however many years, then even a second round pick is just nothing to throw at it. If you truly believe that you can get that done. Now, am I skeptical about it? Absolutely. And all now, and see, I have to separate looking at the plausibility of this, the factors involved. I just can't look at it and say, oh boy, I want them to sign, you know, trade for Justin Fields. Just, you know, the fan aspect left me years ago, the way I have to kind of look at these things, because I have to look at the contracts and stuff like that. And I've got to present the plausibility aspect and why I think something will or won't happen or should or shouldn't happen.
No, I get that. Yeah. And I'm with you as well. I think if I could, not that my advice means anything, but if I could tell Omar Khan one thing, is you got to pick a lane. Do you want Justin Fields? Is he your guy? If he is, go get your guy. If Kenny Pickett's your guy, why are you talking to Chicago? Like, if you believe that, if the public comments from Khan in the organization match how they truly feel, that they believe in Kenny Pickett, they want to give one more sincere chance in 2024 with a new OC, with potentially some more weapons to prove that he can be the guy, then you shouldn't even be calling Ryan Poles. I get due diligence and you ask, but it's a quarterback, and you know, it's like marrying your wife and flirting with the bartender. I mean, like, you got to pick a lane, right or wrong, whether you like it or not. From a fan perspective, you got to pick a lane and figure out who you want your guy to be and proceed from there. And so that's got to happen essentially right now.
Right. So in other words, if you go after Justin Fields and you get him, regardless if you turn around and don't pick up the fifth year option, that you're saying that should be your guy. We are all in on this guy. We traded for him. There's no other way to frame it other than we wanted this other high pedigree quarterback. We're not picking up his fifth year options. He's only going to cost, what did I tell you, he's going to cost in salary, some $3.8 million or something like that. You can swing it from a 2024 salary aspect. That's never been part of the issue mm-hmm. here. It's always that fifth year option and what you're going to do about that beyond that, right? So essentially what you're saying is you agree with me. If you are unequivocally all in on thinking that you can turn this guy around, then whatever you have to give up to get him, even let's say you got him for a fourth. I don't think it's going to happen, but let's just hypothetically throw that out there, right? Let's say you got mm-hmm. him for a fourth and a sixth, which is really peanuts in the grand scheme of thing. Even if it's as low, that low of compensation, you're saying that's the lane that you're in.
Right. And if not, if Pickett's your guy, then don't talk to Chicago again. There's no reason to entertain that idea if you truly believe that Pickett is your guy or can be your guy or deserves a chance to show that he can be the guy for the franchise.
Is there a level of compensation where that would allow you to allow them to sell it as this is going to be a competition?
No, I don't. I don't see that. I don't think anyone would buy that. I could tell you Kenny Pickett would not buy that. You can't sit there the entire offseason and say that we have full faith in Kenny Pickett and he's our QB1 and we believe our starting quarterback's on the present day roster and then go trade for Justin Fields.
Okay. Look, once again, I'm not advocating all sure. this. I've come a long way since December, you know, right. and it's through a process of, well, it only looks like there's only a couple teams left that even maybe potentially trade for this kid. And if that's the case, and the way Chicago's handled on their end, you kind of wonder what kind of compensation they're going to get for him at this point. That at least, and that's where I left that article the other night about surmising what Schefter had to say is, you know, it boils down to, is there at least some plausibility to the fact that the Steelers, that's the way I at least wanted to kind of come out of that article, was, is there at least some plausibility that the Steelers could be involved in this?
Sure. And that is the big question. And that's whenever Schefter goes on SportsCenter, I believe a day or two later, and says, there's been some conversation about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Maybe something can be figured out there. Maybe Schefter's just saying that flippantly, but I think typically when Schefter talks in those kind of terms that are a bit more concrete, he's not saying that, just pulling it out of thin air.
Okay.
So I think there's probably been something going on there. To what extent, I don't know.
Again, what if the Steelers are the only team willing to give up like a third rounder for him?
And he's going to Pittsburgh, I guess. At some point, Chicago will say, Williams is our guy. We got to trade him. Here's the offer. He's out of the NFC. Let's deal him. I mean, he can't hold on to the guy forever, I don't think.
All right. And then even if, let's say it's just one third round pick involved here, and let's even say it's a third round pick in 2025. Mm-hmm. Would you, is there any part of that, you know, barring them obviously picking up the fifth year option, is there any part of you that would at least allow them to sell you that, well, we told you we're going to bring in some competition?
No, I think me personally, some people may buy that. I wouldn't buy that if Justin Fields does come in. And I think you make a good point. Just a quick sidebar. I think a trade for Fields may involve future compensation the way that Darnold did. I think if Chicago is having a tough time getting great offers right now, they may have to compromise and say, okay, we'll take a two next year, or
the cheeseburger, you know. Gladly pay you. In other words, a future cheeseburger. Yeah. And look, if I'm in on this, I want, if I am a team that's in on Fields at this point, and if we are to believe everything that's kind of out there, which is dangerous to do, I want the high pick of the compensation I'm going to give to not be this year.
Yeah, or I could see a conditional. I believe even the Alex Smith deal initially had a condition on one of those second round picks. I think there's going to be some. It won't be just a clean cut, you know, couple of picks this year. I think there'll be some creativity in whatever trade materializes for Justin Fields.
Now, I know what Schefter has said, and Pauline said, and Fowler has said, and everybody has said to this point. There's just part of my gut just tells me he's going to end up in Atlanta. But
sure, he could. I think, well, first of all, here's one thing I think we can all agree upon. I just want this to be over.
Yeah.
I know Fields does, Chicago does, Pittsburgh does.
Dave does, Alex does.
Yeah. At this point, come to Pittsburgh, don't, whatever. Like, let's just have our answer. I'm tired of talking about it. I know people listening probably are tired of talking about it. But when Schefter says the things that he says, you can't ignore it at this point. And, you know, it's going to be a conversation until it's not. I think a mystery team could still show up. I think about the Giants, for example, because a team's not in it until all of a sudden that they're in it. Like, it's kind of one of those things. I think someone could show up there last second out of the blue, as Schefter seemed to indicate. I think it will take some time. I think some dominoes may have to fall, Kirk Cousins in particular. I don't think a deal is going to happen immediately. Let me just say one last thing, and I'm kind of putting on my Bears Depot hat here. If I'm Chicago, obviously you're looking at Caleb Williams. That's the connection there, correct?
Right.
And they met with Caleb Williams during the combine and, you know, had their interview with him and they got to know him. To trade Justin Fields, you have to be sold on Caleb Williams, right? If you're trading Fields, you don't want to sit there and say, okay, we're dealing Fields. Who do we want a quarterback? You have the top pick. You have to know, okay, this is our guy. The one thing that Williams did not do he didn't do a lot of things at the combine, but one critical thing was he did not go through the medical process, correct? He did not get evaluated medically by any team.
My understanding, I believe that's the report.
And that's a bit controversial. Most, you know, it's pretty rare for a team, for a player to do, but that's his right. I'm not debating whether or not that's a good or bad thing. But if I'm Chicago, what Williams has said, by the way, is that he will give the medical to the teams he visits. When he takes his top 30 visits, he will then do the medical process there. So the teams that are truly realistically interested and could get him, the teams he goes visits, he will do the medical then. That's when they will get the medical information. If I'm Chicago, do you trade Justin Fields before you get a medical evaluation on Caleb Williams? What if, God forbid, you trade Fields tomorrow and then you bring Williams in for a visit and you find some issue? You know, I'm not, you know, hopefully this wouldn't happen. The odds are extremely low, but a heart issue, which happens from time to time, Maurice Hurst and others, and some crazy medical red flag occurs with Caleb Williams. I don't know how you justify trading Fields until you are medically clearing your potential franchise quarterback first overall pick.
Sure, I get that. That's I mean, that's a great point by you. But this also goes back into what I kind of said at the opening all this as well too. I think the Bears have done a horrible job of, you know, look, some things obviously is going to be telegraphed just because where you're at and all like that, but they should have done a better job, at least semi trying to sell the fact that, you know what, regardless of what we do, we think that there's still an outside chance of Justin Fields being part of this organization.
I get that, but does any other team, outside team, believe that?
At least it's not out there in print and audio clips, you know?
What have they said? I mean, they haven't outright said that Fields will not be out there.
We want to do right by. He's basically come out and said, yeah, sooner we'd like to get this taken care of with Fields basically as soon as possible.
Sure. No, that's fair. But I mean, even if you had said, oh, we might keep him, I think teams know you know, that you're taking Caleb Williams, well, who feels is not part of your future picture.
It's at least better trying to add some mystery to it than coming out right and say, look, we got to get this guy out of town. You know?
Yeah. My point, I guess, is, I mean, obviously, ideally, the sooner you can deal him, the better. But I think this thing may take some more time to finalize.
All right. I mean, okay, you bring him in for a pre-draft visit and all like that, and you hold on to Fields until then. I mean, that already that goes against kind of what Ryan Poles just said. Once again, he's hung himself by his tongue.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm not saying that Chicago will do that. I just don't know how, as a franchise, you don't operate in that fashion.
All right. Well, I'm trying to say I don't know how you operate in the fashion that you've operated on with Ryan Poles saying as much as he said, basically.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, they've not helped their leverage, right, which I think was probably a tough thing to have to begin with, but they have not done themselves any favors, and the lukewarm trade offers and interest seems to jibe with that.
Okay.
So where do we go from here? I mean, in terms of them coming to Pittsburgh, there's a chance, it sounds like, if I'm Omar Khan.
There is a plausibility aspect to it. And I think a lot of it, as I stated at the end of that article I wrote the other day, a lot of it depends on compensation.
To you, it sounds like he's either going to play in Atlanta or Pittsburgh next year. Is that a fair statement?
Once again, going through, kind of forcing myself to go through the exercises Schefter did on that podcast interview. I thought Schefter seems pretty sure it's not going to be Denver. He says, yeah, Seattle's doesn't sound all that committed to Geno, but he'd be surprised if something there. He's asked about the Raiders. He said, I'm not hearing anything. Not that it's impossible, but it doesn't seem like, you know, the Raiders are going to be in play here. I mean, who else? I mean, you brought up the Giants. Where did that one come from?
Just out of my butt, basically. Daniel Jones is a disaster.
It's not and bad.
It's a cheap contract. No, Jones contract's an albatross, but you know, you could Fields contract is cheap. They could probably make that thing work.
I mean, who else?
I mean, and I think about Dable having Josh Allen in Buffalo, and not that they're the same quarterback, but just kind of hyper athletic and make some freaky plays. I don't know. But I mean, but Schefter said on SportsCenter he'd be surprised if he went to Atlanta. Okay. So, I mean, that seems to downplay that idea, and then immediately shifted towards more positively kind of interest with Pittsburgh. I think he mentioned the Raiders. He mentioned the Raiders as well. I forget what he said about the Raiders.
I don't remember on SportsCenter. Yeah.
He seemed to downplay it, I think, on Pardon My Take.
Right. Look, what does this say about the reporting the reporting cycle if it's neither the Falcons nor the Steelers where Fields ends up? I mean, what does it say about this whole cycle?
I think what it says right now is the only kind of concrete reporting that we've gotten is that the trade market for Fields is not robust. And so I think everyone's kind of trying to figure out where he's going.
Do we really know that for sure, though?
No, but the fact that they're really like nobody has any sort of idea where this guy's going to end up, I think, is kind of a sign that there's not really a hot market right now. The teams aren't banging down Ryan Poles' door to go trade for this guy.
Look, back in December, I thought there would be a little bit more robust market for him.
Me too. But I think the strength of this quarterback class and some other free agent options, Kirk Cousins being one of them, and to a lesser extent, Russell Wilson, is, you know, muddying the waters for quarterback needy teams.
Let me tell you, if you're a team that, speaking of Kirk Cousins, how many more years do you think he's got? And how long can you tie your wagon to him? You know, and sure, especially the kind of money that he's going to make. I mean, that's quite an investment, and you better be right within 2 years, it feels like.
No, I get that. I mean, the Achilles is serious to come off of. The rehab seems to be going well. I don't know, but I think you got to watch Kirk Cousins, and he may be the first quarterback domino to fall, if I had to guess right now. Once we know where he's going, you may get some wheels in motion for the rest of the quarterbacks, either through trade and free agency.
All right. Is there any angle that we have not attacked on this up to date based on the last few days of specular reports?
I don't think so, but I'm sure we'll talk about it again here for the next show. So
it's, and apologies, but I mean, that's, we're supposed to, you know, we pass along what people say and then we talk about it and try to look at it from all angles. And it feels like we've done that. I'll say once again, my gut feeling, and it has been this way for a little bit now, is that he ends up in Atlanta. But I also at this point don't think that there's 0% chance that he ends up in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think it's plausible. I mean, I downplayed the idea of Fields. Again, if I'm Pittsburgh, you got to pick a lane. If you're Pickett, then don't talk to Chicago again. If you're Fields, then you got to push aggressively for Justin Fields.
What about the what did Fowler have to say about Arthur Smith and Kenny Pickett?
Yeah, in quarterback related news, not related to Justin Fields, Jeremy Fowler noting that Arthur Smith,
quarterbacks recently, that are actually on the Steelers roster,
yeah, for 500, Mr. Trebek, rest in peace. He had said that Arthur Smith had joined Kenny Pickett in South Florida recently, and they had a great meeting. Now, of course, we wouldn't hear if the meeting was terrible, and you know, why would you think it would be terrible? But point being that Arthur Smith made the a particular trip to go visit Kenny Pickett in Florida.
All right. So people don't understand. Even if we weren't recording this, this is probably exactly the kind of conversation we would have, right?
Yeah, probably with just more cursing and eating and that kind of stuff.
Well, cursing from me.
Yeah, not me.
Not from you. Go ahead. You can go ahead and put that out there.
All right. anyway. Anything else from a quarterback position? Again, I just want this thing to be resolved, but I think it's going to take some extra time to actually resolve the this field situation.
Look, how many quarterbacks can you court during the offseason? You know, they say they want Mason Rudolph. Let me tell you, Mason Rudolph ain't coming back to this team if you trade. And I know people say, oh, I'm fine. I don't want Mason Rudolph back anyway. But everything else will have been just lip service if this team goes after, you know, or acquires Justin Fields. And if I'm Mason Rudolph, I don't do anything until
That's what I was going to ask.
I don't do a damn thing until I find out where Justin Fields, if Justin Fields is landing in Pittsburgh or not.
So all of this is to say that we may talk about this for two more weeks. Cause I think Cousins has to be a domino that falls. I think Fields has to be a domino that falls after that. And then other quarterbacks can start figuring out their plans.
I'm not going to have to write. I don't want to have to write about this anymore. I wrote about it the other night, but
yeah. All right. Let's talk NFL Combine here. That was the main event during the weekend. We had already spoken. We talked about the first group, I guess, on the Friday show there, Dave, but a lot more action wrapping up on Sunday with the offensive linemen. Saturday was the quarterbacks, the running backs, and the wide receivers. From an interview perspective, and again, really great job by Joe Clark, Ross McCorkle, Jonathan Heitschritter at the Combine this week, getting a lot of information from player interviews, and they were there for Omar Khan's presser. And so tremendous information, and we'll have those guys on the pod here hopefully later this week for Wednesday's or Friday's show. We know 28 formal interviews the team had of their allotted 45. And I always look at this a little less of the players in particular, but just kind of more so on the position groups that kind of tells me what they're targeting early. And they interviewed a bunch of receivers, inside linebackers, and corners. And so that kind of helps to me create a framework for how they're going to attack the draft come April.
Yeah, what do you think about it feels like guys at Senior Bowl didn't get as much attention.
Which makes sense. I think if they've had that policy for a while, as most teams I'm sure do, if you interviewed a guy at the Senior Bowl, felt good about him, then won't burn one of your 45 formals on him at the Combine.
And they talked to a handful of tackles, right?
Yeah, they did. They talked to, that we know of, J.C. Latham from Alabama, Amarius Mims from Georgia, and Graham Barton from Duke. Also spoke with, and Blake Fisher from Notre Dame. Also talked with Cedric Van Fran Granger at Georgia. He was supposed to be at the Senior Bowl, pulled out last second, and so that's why they had the formal with him at the Combine.
Right. I think you framed it right as far as, you know, kind of trying to the early portion of the Blues Clues of positionally and where they might go early in the draft. And you talked the other day about, especially based on the comments that Khan said about inside linebacker and the uncertainty about Cole Holcomb and all like that. Yeah. I think all that is framed correctly. What did we learn, you know, over the weekend, especially when it comes from past the groups that we talked about? We talked about what, defensive line, edge, and linebacker. the other day, right? And that's where we had to talk about, man, there's some decent linebackers in this group. So I guess we kind of pick it up from there and go into the defensive backs. Feels like a pretty damn good class of defensive backs. Cornerbacks specifically, mm-hmm. a lot, really cornerbacks specifically, because this does not look like a great safety class. Would you agree?
I do. I think safety is pretty weak overall, not even guaranteed to have a first rounder selected. I think corner, though, is really strong, where you could see, you know, multiple of these guys. Now, I do want to note that Nate Wiggins, who I've talked about to Pittsburgh a lot, injured his hip flexor on one of his 40 runs. He did run a 4.29, so we know his speed, though I think his athleticism was really never in question. He's a tremendous athlete. You see that on tape, but that's one note there. But yeah, Quinyon Mitchell, Teron Arnold didn't test tremendously well, but he has, you know, good tape overall. It's a really good cornerback class.
What did you think specifically, and you have done the profile on him, what did you think about Nate Wiggins' weight and his arm length?
That was a negative for sure, and I was surprised on both his numbers. He came in at a 173, the lightest corner there. I knew he wasn't going to be a tremendously heavy guy, but I thought he'd be in that mid-180s range, but 173, super light, and then the length at 30.5 inches were kind of the type of corner Pittsburgh seems to be gravitating towards. You see them draft Joey Porter Jr. last year and then Corey Trice in the 7th round. That lack of length for Wiggins could really hurt him in the Steelers' eyes.
Yeah, when we talk about what the Steelers look for, those things really, really stuck out for him to come under 180 that far and to have just, 30.5 inch arms?
Yes.
Certainly raised an eyebrow there. He did run, heck, at 173 and his kind of build and what he's put out on tape, he better run fast. And it's too bad he didn't get a second attempt of that because he was injured and all like that. And I don't think because he didn't do the shuttle or the 3-cone, he jumped fine, I think, right? 36 and 10'7", so nothing there. I think the main thing there is you just kind of wonder, and even if he's available at 20th overall, based on what the Steelers normally look for when it comes to the overall length and you know, the body composition, the weight, you know, with him.
Yeah, there weren't a ton of super long corners, though, in this group. There are some. Cam Hart from Notre Dame, I think you've mentioned him a time or two, Dave. Who else is in that kind of longer, in the mold of a Porter and Trice? Again, there don't seem to be...
The Cooper DeJean out of Iowa, 6'1", 203, although we don't have the official... Was he one that didn't measure the height, Cooper?
We don't have an official height on him from our sheet. I'm not sure why that is, though. His length, though, only 31 1/8. Longer than Wiggins, but not, you know, super long.
Let's see. Who else popped out as longer with some long arms? Kyrie Jackson out of Oregon, but he ran in the 4.5 range. So that's, you know, that's a bit of a red flag in and of itself. I tell you who I was already a little high on him coming into this weekend, but there and he's going to be more as a nickel dime type player. I think especially if he would land in Pittsburgh, that's that Mike Sandra still out of Michigan. There, you know, other than him being 5'9" and 3/8", everything, and obviously a little bit shorter arms at 30 and 7/8". I don't think he's obviously a first round draft pick or anything like that, but there's not a lot not to like about that kid, especially if you're looking at slot options there. Who else, Alex, of this group? Hart, I think, is somebody you need to keep an eye on. Melton, I'm out of Rutgers is another name. I think I mentioned the other day, pre-combine is a guy that I think needs to be looked at, although he's a little light at 187 there. Got into a little bit of tape on him, jumped out of the building too, 40.5 inches and 11 foot 4 inch, broad jump there. I think you can rule out Kalen King. He's going to have to move to safety probably. Mm-hmm. Who else in here?
Yeah, I think the slot options are really interesting. Sandra still, for sure, former receiver, great ball skills production. I think he checks all the boxes.
Captain.
Was he a captain?
I think he was a captain.
Yeah, him, Melton, I kind of view as an NFL slot, but there's some size to potentially play on the outside. And he's physical, he uses that length well. I want to look at Andrew Phillips from Kentucky. He played a lot in the slot. I want to get to know him a bit more. And then Daquan Hardy, got a report on him on Monday. Definitely a slot at the next level. We played some outside of Penn State, but really good ball skills, really good tracking, a returner. Not that it's super relevant for Pittsburgh for a defensive player, but he had great numbers, a 4.3, 8.40, 42.5-inch vertical, 10.6 broad. That could be an NFL nickel at the next level.
I agree. Let's see. I'm trying to think who else I had on the list there. Kool-Aid, potentially. He didn't do anything, though, did he?
Yeah, he's got that fifth metatarsal on his foot. He's going to work out at his pro day and then get surgery after. Reporters will be ready for the start of the season, but caught an injury red flag there.
Obviously, Quinyon Mitchell, but is he going to last? I mean, if he lasts to 20, you got to run that card up, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. It would be against precedent, and it only means so much, especially with Omar Khan, the GM. But, you know, for them to take a non-Power 5 in the first round, I guess the question becomes, will they be at that Toledo Pro Day?
Right.
I mean, he was at Senior Bowl. They got to know him there. But, I mean, the history of Pro Days and Power 5s are pretty strong in Pittsburgh.
What do you know? I have not watched anything on Decameron Richardson out of Mississippi State.
I haven't.
Combine.
Haven't gotten to him. He's 6 foot, 183, and I'm looking at the wrong name.
188. Yes. Yeah, ran 4.34. Decent jumping. When it comes to, I have not turned. Do we even have a? I don't think we have a profile on him yet. Do we?
I don't believe so. I'm sure we'll get to it here sooner than later.
All right. I roll back to kind of a couple of names that I'd said pre combine there. I think Cam Hart's definitely one of those ones to look at.
At safety, again, not a super great class. Was surprised how slow Cameron Kinchins ran, who's arguably the top safety. Him and Tyler Newbin from Minnesota are competing for that top spot. Jaden Hicks, he did not run, but he jumped really well. And I think his shuttle times were decent overall for his size. And so that's one name to look at. Trying to find that safety, it's going to be more of a mid-round kind of class where you're trying to find that more diamond in the rough.
Right. I agree. And more specifically, probably a box guy that can help you in coverage. Right.
Right. And, you know, James Williams, you know, so he could be a linebacker. He ran 4.65. He didn't test that well. He is 231. So he's kind of got a linebacker build. Is he be a hybrid guy, full-time linebacker? We'll see. Want to watch some of Jalen Simpson from Auburn. Not that he's a strong safety, probably be more of a nickel type, but just kind of looking at slot options. He's listed with the safeties, maybe an NFL slot corner.
What's going to happen with that Sione Vaki? Didn't they ask him to do some running back drills as well, too?
Yeah, I believe so. I thought he would really have a great workout. He did not, though, from the numbers. I mean, a 4.62 40, he jumped well, 39.5 inches in the vertical, 10.5 in the broad, but that 40 time came in way slower than what I thought it would be. I don't know if he's hurt or something going on there with him.
All right, needless to say, we do not expect this team to draft a safety in the first three or four picks, probably, right?
Yeah, I think free agency is where they're going to target this thing. Not going to take a safety early. I'll put it that way.
All right. Tight end. As we said prior coming into this weekend, we're probably not going to be talking about tight ends too terribly much throughout this thing. However, if there was one that kind of fits specifically with Arthur Smith, who would that be?
I think it's Bell from Florida State, Jaheim Bell, more of a potential fullback, H-back type, kind of getting some looks there. I think he told Ross McCorkle or one of our guys that teams have talked to him about playing fullback. So it's a little less of a tight end, but I think Bell's a guy that would potentially fit.
And Brock Bowers is going to end up with the Cincinnati Bengals, so we don't need to talk about him. running backs.
Yeah, not a lot of discussion there. I mean, I haven't done a lot of work on the class. I feel like they're going to potentially add something late on day three. Isaac Rundo from Louisville, he had a tremendous workout, great testing overall. I mean, I'm just trying to find guys that have the body type that Pittsburgh looks for, and Grundo is one of those names, although his stock probably improved after this week. Stick out to you, Dave?
Well, one of them we know is coming in for a pre-draft visit, right?
Yeah, that's Dylan Johnson, excuse me, from Washington. That's been reported, one of the 30 visits that they'll have. He did not run well. I think he has some ankle issues. I don't know how much that impacted him for this, but he's got that size and production Pittsburgh looks for.
He's that real gritty guy that got hurt and tried to come back into the game, wasn't he? In the college playoff. And if I remember correctly, I have not looked at his tape, but if I remember correctly, in just some of the highlights, especially from the from watching the playoff games, I think he's pretty decent in pass protection as well too.
Okay, I had not done a deep dive on him. I know he can catch. He was at Mississippi State for 3 years, and he caught 68 passes, I think, in 2021. He didn't catch as much last year at Washington because they had so many receivers and Polk, Adunze, and others to throw to. But it seems like at the least he can catch.
All right, the quarterbacks. Boy, they could have done the receivers a better job in some of those drills, couldn't they?
Yeah, I think so. It's so tough, though. You never thrown to these guys before trying to get timing down. It's just it's not really conducive to success. Obviously, a lot of these guys didn't throw. Joe Milton wild with the arm, but the questions about everything else besides the arm. Any quarterbacks kind of stick out? I thought Devin Leary threw the ball pretty well, late round type of guy.
Yeah, I was busy. I kind of wonder what's going to happen with Jordan Travis, who didn't, obviously coming off of injury and all like that. Wasn't there some sort of the Steelers talking to him at the Shrine and all like that? And mm-hmm. He's obviously coming off the injury and things like that. And the major media keeps trying to link the Steelers to J.J. McCarthy, but I think coming out of this combine and all like that, feels like McCarthy might be like the fourth or fifth off the board, doesn't it?
Does not sound like he will be there when Pittsburgh is up at pick 20. So that seems to be the prevailing wisdom right now.
All right. Long story short, I mean, if this team does draft a quarterback, it feels like it would be later in this thing.
Yeah, for sure. I don't see it happening early. All right, wide receivers, tremendous group, super talented, crazy numbers across the board. I'm not even sure where to begin with this group, but it's super, super impressive.
We can start at 4.21.
Yeah, that's probably, you're right, a good place to start. There was a combine record from Xavier Worthy from Texas, ran 4.25 unofficial his first time, went after it a second time, got 4.22 unofficial, which became 4.21 officially, breaking John Ross's record of 4.22 set back in 2017. So a guy that even before the combine was projected to be about mid second round, early second round pick, probably plays his way into that late first round conversation.
165 pounds though.
Well, as you said with Wiggins, if you're going to be 165, you better run fast and you might as well break a record while you're at it. So that's a concern there. But I mean, he's not just a track guy. I mean, there was some tape and production and not one of those, Caitlin Barnes ran 4.23 a couple of years ago, but it was the tape isn't there. With Worthy, there is really good tape.
You want to talk about some others that were impressive in here. Most notably, I'm going to start calling him Adonis Mitchell.
It fits. I mean, that is freaky.
That guy is put together at 6'2¼", 205 pounds, 32 3/8 inch arms, 9 inch hands. Officially, 4.34 40, 39 inch vertical, 11.4 broad jump. Out of Texas. I think we've already got a profile up on him. He would be you have to think he's first round or not, if not early second round type material coming out of this. Not that he wasn't ahead of time, but I mean, if anything, you got confirmation from the combine. That guy is put together and put on a show.
Yeah, according to Kentley Platt for the RAS aspect, 9.9. Eight, I think it was, that's unofficial. Do we have an official number on that? 9.97 maybe officially, but regardless, one of the top numbers that we've seen. And yeah, we have a report up on him. He should be a first round pick.
I think the Steelers will definitely have interest in Roman Wilson out of Michigan. Is a name I believe to watch. Who else we got in here?
Like Brian Thomas from LSU. I know Neighbors gets all the attention, but he had a really productive year. 6'3", essentially 209, ran a 4.33, 38.5 inch vertical, 10.6 broad, had a formal with him. Pittsburgh did. So, I mean, I'm not sure if he'll even be there at 20, but I think some of these receivers will get pushed down when you have such a strong quarterback class and tackle class and some corners in there as well. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of receivers that go in the top 50, but some of them will get pushed down.
Boy, Ricky Pearsall out of Florida is a name that I think you can link to the Steelers having interest in. McCaffrey and McConkey are two names I think the Steelers would certainly have interest in this class. Did you get to report about Roma Dusey?
I didn't mention that, no, but yeah, but maybe I mentioned that just briefly, that Pittsburgh had a formal with him that was reported by Ian Rappaport late Saturday night, and just kind of mentioning Pittsburgh along with some other teams in that potential trade-up range, because obviously no one expects Odunze to be there at 20. He's going to be probably a top 10 pick, but no worse than top 15. So, you know, why are you meeting with him? I think you look at some of the best names in the class, just kind of see what the standard is to work off of that. There's value in doing that. But again, when you mention him, and interviewing at least five other receivers formally, essentially all, you know, top 50 type of picks, it's a clear trend line for where Pittsburgh's head seems to be at.
Malachi Corley didn't do anything. He's the one that everybody compares to 49ers Debo Samuels.
Didn't even measure. He didn't even do the measurement, which is odd.
An interesting thing with Keon Coleman out of Florida State, didn't run the 40 well at all, 4.61, but I did see Next Gen Stats put up some, I think, miles per hour as far as him running routes at the combine. And in other words, he is not a straight line guy, but represented himself well outside of running, you know, being a straight line guy. So I expect him to run faster than 4.61.
Yeah, it kind of goes into the old debate about, you know, time speed and play speed, because obviously no one's coming out of a track stance on Sundays. It's about your play speed. And I think he had the fastest speed of anyone through the gauntlet. And I think last year, the fastest guy through was Puka Nacua, you know, later round pick that became just an incredible receiver for the Rams. So Coleman is interesting, like you said. I mean, historically, success with a 4.640 time is not really there. But then you see some of the next gen stats that you reference, and you sit there and say, okay, this guy, he plays fast.
I think a later round option might be that it's unfortunate he didn't run, though, that Marcus Rosemy Jack Saint out of Georgia.
What do you know on him? I'm not super familiar.
Just watching him throughout the season at Georgia. And it also seems like he'd be more of a later round guy that you could get some special teams work out of as well, too. I don't think he's a top two or three round guy, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think the point is, I mean, you're talking potential dozen receivers go in the top 50. I mean, mentioned all the names that we talked about. Xavier Leggett from South Carolina had a really good workout. He's got some big time production, goes up there and gets the ball. I question separation skills with him, but the testing is overall really strong. So if you need a receiver, this is certainly a class to get it. And again, that goes back to, if you want to trade a Diontae Johnson, it's harder to sell that because there are so many wide receivers for teams to go pick up in the draft.
If you had to pick, if you had to throw a dart right now at one that you could really see being a Steeler, based on everything you've seen up until this point on this really conference.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I'd have to do some more homework.
I have kind of two. I have Roman Wilson and I have Ricky Pearsall.
Okay. Yeah, I was leaning towards Wilson. I did notice, whatever it's worth, all the receivers they formerly interviewed with, they were bigger guys, you know, 6'1 and above. I do think they, you know, ideally would prefer to have size at receiver, although I don't think it's required under Arthur Smith. Yeah, I don't know, Dave. That's a really good question there. Wilson, I think, is a really solid choice.
And you had a nice comparison or watched quite a bit of Ladon McConkey during the combine.
Yeah, he's one of my first profiles. I'm a big fan of his game. I think his separation, his route running is among the best in the class. And people say he's going to run in the 4.5s. I thought he was going to run a whole lot better. And he ran great. He ran 4.39 and just, you know, really fluid in drills. I don't know if he's a true number one where the offense flows through him. I think he's kind of more complimentary number two type receiver, not just a slot guy. Kind of gets typecast in that way. I think he can play outside, inside. My comp name was Jahan Dotson. So it's kind of more of a number two complimentary piece, which hurts his value, but really fun tape.
All right, offensive line wrap things up on Sunday. And before that, though, Zach Frazier Was late getting into the combine media sessions because of medicals and all like that. Do you want to kind of recap that real quick? Where Zach Frazier's at?
Yeah, I mean, he broke his leg, you know, late last year. And so when you go with the medical process, teams want to poke and prod you. I think he said he was getting some extra MRIs done, and teams want to see this thing and that thing. And so it holds you up. I mean, that is like the most grueling part of the process. If you got a medical red flag, you are in there for, I think Johnson, the running back from Washington, said he was in the medical facilities from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. I mean, just what, 7 hours of just getting just tested the entire time. But I don't know the prognosis super well, but Frazier did not work out, did not run, did not jump, but he was doing the on-field drills. And so I think his recovery seems to be pretty remarkable. And, you know, I don't know what the testing is revealing, but just visually, he seems like he's going to be good to go for camp.
Man, the fact that he was out there doing drills, I think that speaks volumes. We'll see what he's able to do as far as the, you know, time stuff and all like that at his pro day and all like that. And maybe he'll do it, maybe he won't. But the fact that he was out there doing drills looked pretty damn clean doing it. I think that's a positive in and of itself coming out of combine for him, especially as late in the season as he suffered that injury there. And it just sounds like teams want to make sure that, you know, are we sure it's just a bone and no ligament stuff or anything like that. Look, if he had ligament stuff and all like that, he wouldn't have been doing what he did on the field in the combine. Right.
Yeah, he's a tough guy, but probably not that tough. So he'll probably go back for combine medical rechecks in a couple of weeks. But I mean, it just visually seems like he's going to be good. I believe he's working with Duke Mannyweather too. So he looked good in workouts, and that's obviously a highly regarded independent O-line trainer.
Jackson Powers Johnson, obviously the other center we've talked a lot about. He did not. He did the vertical and did the broad, but he didn't do anything else. But he did do the on-field drills, and you know, it doesn't seem like there's any issue there. Looked as advertised there. Other than those two centers, Graham Barton wasn't doing any on-field stuff, was he?
Yeah, I don't recall him being out there. I don't know what the reason was. He didn't do anything on the field on Sunday, I don't believe.
Right. Interesting to find out. I haven't researched why that is. He obviously is the tackle that many are projecting really could play anywhere on the line, right?
Well, I think he's only played center and played a bunch of left tackle, but he's got the size. I mean, okay, let me ask you this. He weighs in at 6.053, 313, 32 and 7/8 inch arms. Is there any chance?
Yeah, he's not going to play tackle. No.
Okay, you think now the question is, does he go to guard or does he become a huge center? 6'5 is pretty large for a center.
Yeah, I think that's the big question is where does he kick in inside?
And you had the question about Troy Fontenot from Washington.
Oh, Lord, you're going to get in trouble here.
Yeah, big debate here. So 6'03", 6", 317, 34.5 inch arms. I think primarily played tackle at Washington. You know, I think he was being viewed as a guard conversion candidate at the NFL level, but I think he could stick a tackle.
He moves really, really well, there, without a doubt. He looks every bit of the part. The arms came in just long enough for Troy at 34.5. I do wonder, and I got you to tell the people what you found. And we just kind of look at these things historically. They're not end-all do-alls there, but 6'3¾". Was the last, and a lot of people say this guy is, regardless of everything, he's going in the first round. You know, when's the last time a tackle went in the first round under 6'4"?
I believe in terms of tackles that actually play tackle at the NFL level and not a Peter Skoronski type, for example, that kicked inside and played guard at the next level. From my research, and it's a little hard to find for sure, but Isaiah Wynn in, what year did I say that was? 2018, I believe. Okay. That was the last. I can't find many. I can find a lot of guys right at 6'4". Ike Okwuonwu is one of them. Who was the other that I'd mentioned? There was somebody else right at 6'4" that got drafted in the first round. But in terms of being below that, like Fontenot is, I think Isaiah Wynn is the last name.
Look, he moves fine. I haven't watched as much tape as Ross McCorkle did. Ross did the profile on him on the site and all like that. But I got to watch more of him. But there were a couple things where I think he ran into being able to work against some power stuff. with him that kind of had me concerned in a little bit of tape that I watched him. Here's what the conversation is going to be on him moving forward. Is he a true first round draft pick? And second, is he's going to be probably this year's, does he need to kick inside or not?
Yeah, it's really what, do you value the height more or the arm length more? And obviously the tape plays a role too, but I think he's a good athlete. I don't think athleticism is the concern where he has to kick inside the guard. I think he would, but that length, I think he, if a team wanted to play him a tackle, I have no issue with that.
Okay. And the other thing associated, I think, with him is the age, right? Going to be 24 in October, I think, is it?
Yeah, that's what you had said. So from a Pittsburgh perspective, 24 is on the older side for a first-round pick.
All right. Once again, he did nothing wrong at the combine.
Yeah, it was a really good workout overall, and the expectation is first round, but it's a really deep tackle class overall, and so somebody's going to fall. They can't all go top 15, especially with all the quarterbacks, 4 or 5, that are going to go in the first round, all these freaky receivers, the cornerbacks. Something's got to give. Somebody's got to fall here.
Good tackle class overall, though. I think, boy, that Joe Alt for a big guy like that to move like that really, really looked good. Roll down through some of these other tackles here, Alex. The Penn State kid, thought representatives for Shanu out of Penn State looked every bit as advertised in there.
Now he had that. Right, hamstring injury on one of his runs, right? That I think shortened his day. But I mean, the measurables look good. He ran, fine. He jumped fine. So just day got cut short, unfortunately.
All right. Amarius Mims. Man, you want to talk about put together a specimen that can move. 6'7" 3/4, 340 pounds, a dancing bear, so to speak. Really, 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 for a guy that size, be able to move like that, kind of in that planet theory kind of range. The big question with him is not, the build, the athleticism and all like that. It's just the inexperience.
As you said, lack of experience, 8 career starts, about 800 and change total snaps. And then he gets hurt at the combine and can't go through the full workout. So typically on field drills, it matters some, but the tape's going to override most of that. I think you wanted to really see more from Mims on field, ideally, because you want to get some more exposure to this guy. Just have not had the exposure to him. And so the injury really was unfortunate for him overall, but kudos to Mims for toughing it out. I think he's a real boom bust kind of guy. I think the talent's immense, but there is a risk when you take a guy potentially in the first round that just does not have a lot of playing time.
Not a first round guy, but a guy that needs exploring. Roger, the other Washington tackle, Rosengarten. I thought overall put together a nice combine there. I look forward to digging deeper into his film. Unfortunately, the Yale kid didn't do anything. Kieran, who else? Alex, am I missing here?
I mean, that's a lot of the tackles, but I mean, there's still some others. Jordan Morgan from Arizona, that's a potential later first round type of guy. Fuega from Oregon State, also in that first round mix. The length isn't ideal. He's kind of borderline, 33 1/8 inch arms. Was he going to be a conversion guy? Going to play guard at the NFL level? We'll have to see. But I mean, it's a really strong offensive line class.
I need to look into Julian Pearl, too.
I did the report on him. He's long. He's, can run block. I think in pass pro, he gives up the edge pretty easily. He's got to work on his hand placement some, exposes his chest too much. So I view him as probably actually someone that's going to go to guard. I know he's a bit tall, but I don't think he has the feet and the pure athleticism to play offensive tackle.
J.C. Latham didn't do anything out of Alabama.
Did he do on-field work? I thought he did on-field work.
Did he?
I'll have to check. He didn't test, but there's two Lathams. I'm trying to think back to Brady or JC. I thought JC was doing something on field.
All right. So overall, though, it feels like it's a deeper tackle class than last year.
Oh, yeah, by far. It's one of the deeper tackle classes in recent history. I think the interior offensive lineman, the one guy that's leaving me scratching my head in a good way for him, a bad way for me, is Tanner Bordolini from Wisconsin. I was pretty down on him when I wrote the profile before the combine. the lack of length is still a big problem. He came in at 31 and a half, I think. Let me double check. Yeah, 31 and a half, but he tested really well. His agility times were historically good. I think he has the best three-cone time ever. He came in at 7.16. I believe that breaks Jason Kelce's record. And so I didn't see that level of athlete on tape. I thought his pass protection was inconsistent. His technique, he would drop his head too often. The lack of length hurts. He's not a – I thought he had a really good anchor. I thought he could really stall out bull rushes, but I didn't see the great pass protection. But that's a guy with testing that says – I got to watch this guy some more.
All right. The Lobster Cracker Award goes to Amarius Mims, I think, at 11 and a quarter. How'd you like him to put those mitts on you? And then Frazier, what was his? Zach Frazier was 10 and 7/8, man. Those are some mitts on a center there.
Yeah, talk about grip strength. I mean, you wonder why this guy only lost two wrestling matches his entire high school career. So just tough guy overall. Again, I think that's Pittsburgh's dude. I know Jackson Parrish Johnson's been in the mix, but just to me, Frazier is a Steeler.
I'm scrolling through there. I think those two had the, let's see, Jordan Morgan had 10 and 7/8 inch hands out of.
And Latham was 11. JC okay. Latham was 11.
Okay. All right. All right. We got a lot of coming out of, as is the case, every combine when it ends, I got a lot of tape to watch.
Yeah. One other name I do want to mention too, because he was one of my sleeper prospects that I think had a really good workout, was Matt Lee from Miami, a center. Came in heavier. He came in at the Shrine Bowl at 288, which is pretty light, but he came in the combine 301. Ran well, a 1.76-10 split, 5.03-40, jumped well, looked good in drills. I believe his RES score is one of the top 10 for a center since 1987, according to Mathbomb. So Lee is a guy where if hypothetically Pittsburgh does not take a center early, which I do not anticipate happening, but if we're talking third, fourth round, I'm all over Matt Lee from Miami.
Yeah, he could end up being like the third or fourth best center in his class, couldn't he?
I think so. He's got really good tape overall. He's highly experienced. He played most of his career at Central Florida, then transferred up to Miami, but put on good tape against quote unquote better competition, played well against Clemson this past year and their strong defensive linemen. So I was a big fan of Matt Lee.
And I think you probably, I can imagine you fist pumping when that 301 showed up.
Yeah, I think literally did. I mean, I was really like legitimately happy because the way it was a concern 288, but I think the 301 is perfect.
And he ran
it the test well 301.
Yeah, too. Yeah. He not only that, he moved well for being at that weight. So
yeah, because some guys just add weight and they just look sloppy and they don't test well. But I mean, he added weight and was a tremendous athlete.
All right. Anybody else you want to look? We got a long time for the draft now, but we just kind of wanted to highlight some things that stuck out to us. We're going to have a round table with our three guys that were in Indy when.
Either for Wednesday's show or Friday's show, off the check schedules, but we'll get those guys on and certainly get their valuable input.
All right. What else do we have left to talk about, AK?
I think that's basically it. We hit all the interview stuff, combine stuff. So I think we get to some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right. We'd like to once again thank Justin Fields for providing a lot of content for the Terrible Podcast all off season. Let me see here what we got. I don't know if we got much. Xavier Robinson says, David, it seems like you guys are close to ruling out a trade for a quarterback. Not if you listen to the first part of the show. Do you think an overlooked aspect of this is that Kenny was not drafted by Omar Khan? We always hear about GMs wanting to find their guy. I think the competitor in Omar wants to get somebody he can call his guy and change the outlook of the franchise. With Fields, he would be trading for a younger and more talented player at the most important position in all sports, and it would likely cost a second round pick or slightly more, he writes. Do you think Omar doesn't make this trade? If Omar doesn't make this trade, it's because he does not believe in Justin Fields, or he does believe in Kenny Pickett. Yeah, that's a hard, after reading your opening there and then really boiling it down to your question, Xavier, do you think if Omar doesn't make this trade, it's because he does not believe in Justin Fields, or he does believe in Kenny Pickett? That's an interesting way to phrase that question.
Yeah, maybe both. I think, I mean, it would – to get the answer on pick, you probably look at the entire offseason and say, what quarterbacks do they add? And if they don't really add a big swing, then it probably speaks to more of the latter and faith in Kenny Pickett. But I mean, to my standpoint, if the team, and publicly they've essentially said this, if the team believes in Kenny Pickett and thinks he can turn his career around and have a big 2024, then you're not entertaining the idea of Kirk Cousins or Fields or Russell Wilson or a top draft pick that you're going to add. Yeah, veteran quarterback, re-sign Rudolph, sign Tannehill, whatever. But you're not, you shouldn't even be exploring those other avenues if you are that strongly convicted about Kenny Pickett.
Okay. Deshaun Campbell writes in, "Sup guys, Dave, it looks like you might be getting your wish. I read something that the NFL is going to try out electronic first down measurements. I'm real curious on how you guys picture this thing to look. Sharks with laser beams." That did tickle my fancy. What do we know about that? I didn't dive deep into the report, but I think we write it up, or was
I wrote
after
it up.
Dark. Okay.
It's optical tracking. The NFL tested it at the Super Bowl and I believe a couple of stadiums last year, MetLife and I believe down in Miami. That now what this is, to be clear, from my understanding at least right now, is that it's not going to tell you where the football's not going to light up when there's a first down. What it'll do is the ref will spot the ball, and instead of bringing out the chain gang to measure is it a first down or not, the optical tracking can tell you if it's a first down or not based on the ref's spotting. So the ref will still have to determine where the ball was downed at. And then from there, the tracking can tell you if it's a first down or not. So it's not replacing that element. It will just replace the need for the chain gang to take the time to go out there and to measure and get a note card if need be, and all that kind of time consuming aspect of it would be eliminated.
All right. I'm glad you clarified all that. We got to be close to chipping the ball and all like that, right? I mean, come on.
I think there's probably a lot of complication and layers to that that have to still be, because you're dealing with so many bodies and movement and pileups. I think it still might be a ways away.
All right. Well, maybe incremental progress here. Okay, I think other than that, I don't think people are probably going to be sending in these questions now, thinking we're having a show Monday morning. But once again, we're recording this late Sunday night because of time constraints and trying to get ahead of some stuff for next week there. Anything else you'd like to add? Did we go 2 hours again?
Right now we're under. Who knows? The show's not over yet. You know how we get sometimes. NFL proposal appears to be modifying kickoffs. It's not been officially proposed and much less adopted by the league owners, but they're basically trending towards XFL rules where the two teams kickoff coverage and return team will be 5 yards apart, and then they can't move until the ball is fielded. And then the return begins. That way you still hopefully have kick returns without the car crashes that lead to head and neck injuries and concussions. Also, this one was weird to me. They would eliminate onside kicks except for the fourth quarter, and you would have to declare that you're attempting an onside kick before you actually go out there and try it. So they would eliminate the surprise onside kick, which there aren't many of those in the first place. So I don't know why the NFL seems to really care about eliminating that aspect.
All right. I guess the spring meetings are coming up soon too, right?
Yeah, they happen around March, the first round of owners meetings. Now, also for the onside kick, they would the proposal is, I believe, that you would be able to have 6 players to the side that you're kicking to. So that would increase the chances of recovery, because right now it's 5 and 5. And so 6 and 4 would be the new way to align, which will hopefully increase the chance to recover the onside kick.
All right. Anything else?
Live stream tonight for Monday. Dave and I will be on at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and I'm guessing you guys will have some questions for us. So we'll be on there for an hour.
Probably some field stuff and some Deontay Johnson stuff. And sounds like the Chiefs are going to franchise tag Snead tomorrow.
Yeah, and there's a, you know, will they tag and trade him? That was been the rumor a week or so ago from, Rappaport or somebody had tweeted that out. So I wouldn't expect him to come to Pittsburgh, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
All right. If anything else happens, we will discuss it on the next show, which will be Wednesday. And as Alex said, Monday night, we will have the live stream on YouTube. So please join us on that and we'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. So with that, as always, you can follow me on Twitter /X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Cazorra. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. And hit the ad-free button up there. So in the meantime, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.